Educational Ministry of Columbia International University. We've been preparing world Christians to know Him and to make Him known since 1923.
Awesome. Awesome time of worship. Bill, I slept 8 hours last night and I did not go to bed reading a sex book. So hopefully I can say something intelligent here. I love Bill Jones. And yeah, Bill's my friend. Okay, enough of that. All right. Thank you for letting me be here. Got a brief amount of time this morning, and so I want to jump right in. And whatever is going on out there or there, as important as that is, there's absolutely nothing more important than what's going on right in here. And if there's not anything going on in here, or there's not much going on here, or there are things not working correctly in here, then whatever it is that's in here that's not working keeps us from doing that out there. Our ministry is involved in about 30 countries around the world. We work all over the United States. But let me just tell you, when there's something not working in here, then it hampers God from working out there. That's true for me. It's true for you. And so this morning, I'm going to invite you. I'm going to invite you to go under the water line with me. I'm going to invite you to go into my heart so that hopefully out of what some of the things I've experienced, you can go into your heart. The Bible says that the heart's deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Everybody here has heard that passage. Okay, that is true. But at the same time, the heart is the place out of which flow the living waters. The heart is the treasure, God's treasure from which good things come. The writer of Proverbs says, keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flow the springs of life. And so when we look this morning at our hearts, and I'm going to let you see inside of mine, I'm going to let you jump off the diving board with me. Dive down in. See what's in here. And maybe out of what is and has been in here, you can see what it is that God is saying to you about your heart. All for the purpose of knowing more of who we are, so that we can be more of who He wants us to be to the people around us and around the world. Well, there was a point this last fall where I shed lots of tears. And it was a very painful time in my life. And God broke through. And it was a point in time in which I really took a dive off the diving board and dove down in under the waterline of my life, seeing things that I'd never imagined or seen before. It's scary to do that. It was scary for me. If you jump off the diving board with me, it'll probably be scary for you. Let me begin with Ray and Randy. Ray and Randy are two guys that are on my board at Reach Out Youth Solutions. They're both good friends. They both love me. They called me up and they said, Barry, we'd like to meet with you. I said, sure, I'd love to meet with you. They said, no, well, that's good, but we want to meet with you tonight. I said, well, tonight? Yeah, it's really important, so whatever you're doing, we need to meet with you. I said, all righty then. It's a little scary in itself. So I went over to one of their homes. We sat down. We had a two-hour conversation. And really, Ray and Randy confronted me about some reports that they had gotten and some people who had spoken to them about the way I had treated those people. And they were concerned about that. And we took a couple of hours just looking at some of the things that people had said, some of the things that people had said about the way I'd treated them. And it was not really a pretty sight. It was something that was really hard to hear. And yet at the end, I pretty much embraced what they said, this is true. Later on, they said, Barry, it just didn't seem like you were emotionally engaged in getting hold of this. Key thing that'll come back in a few minutes. We agreed on some things that we were going to do as a result of that to begin to resolve the situation. And we began to move toward that. After Ray and Randy was my sister Kathy, my only sister, who took a huge risk and spoke some things to me that nobody had ever said before, that nobody was ever really willing to, maybe they tried to say them, but I couldn't hear them, or they were not willing to say them to me in my presence. And this is the same sister who has been a pastor's wife for 34 years. And you know the phrase, the pastor ran off with his church secretary. Her husband did that about a year and a half before. And so she'd come to live close to us. And so we had spent more time together over the last year than we'd ever spent really in our lives. And she knew a lot of things about me. She probably knows me more than anyone else in the whole world. And so when my sister took this risk to write some things down and sit down with me in front of someone else and say, Barry, I want to read this to you, it had my attention. And basically the essence of her letter said this, is Barry, you're self-absorbed, you're perfectionistic, you're entitled, and you're controlling. Well, that was stunning to me in some ways. In other ways, I'm going, yeah, I can see that. At the end of her letter, this is what she said. She says, and you are so unaffected by it all. And of all the things she said, that was the one thing that the Holy Spirit used to get my attention. And I was asking, you know, that's true. Why am I so unaffected by it all? Because she had, in essence, said to me, Barry, really, the truth is, if you grabbed hold of what I just said to you, you'd fall on your face here and ask God for mercy. And I didn't. And it wasn't that I was rebellious or stubborn. I just didn't know what to fall on my face and do with what she had just said to me. I had no idea. But I had a real sense that what she was saying to me was really true. That was my sister. Then there was Henry Nouwen. Anybody here know of Henry Nouwen? I was going on a trip, and I was in a hurry to get out the door, and I like to read on trips, and so I didn't have a book, and I just went over a little stack of books, and here was the thin one, and I grabbed a thin one. So it'd go in my backpack, and when I looked at it, it said, Life in the Beloved by Henry Nouwen. And I don't know if this is your experience or not, but for me personally, this time and in other situations, sometimes the Lord just puts books in your life, and they're meant for you. It's like he wrote that book for you at that given time, and this book was just like that. I'd actually started reading this book. I'd read it once before all this other stuff came up, and I pulled it back out and started reading it again because there were some things in that book that were really, really pretty significant in terms of what I was going through, because Henry Nouwen's thesis in Life and the Beloved is that we all have a tendency to move our lives along in order to achieve and to be successful, to perform and be achievement-oriented and be successful. And I said, yeah, I go with that. But he said this. He said, yes, and we do that. But really, that's not the source of our identity. Because what he said is this. He says, really, what we're looking for is our true self. And our true self is found in the same place Jesus found his true self. when the father said to him, "This is my beloved son in whom I am well pleased." And he said, just like Jesus was God's beloved son, we are also now in small letters, God's beloved sons and daughters. And he is very well pleased with us, not because of our achievement and performance, but more because we are because we simply belong to him and we are his beloved. And then he breaks this book out and really using the analogy, the word picture of communion, he says, really what God's doing in our lives and the lives of all of us is this, is that just like the bread that is broken for communion, here's what God does. God, as in the same way we serve communion, God takes us, he blesses us, he breaks us, and then he gives us as life to the world. And just as God has chosen us before the foundation of the world, just as he has blessed us in the promise of Genesis chapter 12 and many other places where he says he's blessed us, and just as he said he wants us to be broken because of our brokenness as human beings, the sacrifice acceptable to the Lord is a broken spirit, a broken and contrite heart he won't despise. Just as God wants to do all those things, he then, as we go through that process in our lives and on the journey of life, he wants to open up for us a greater and greater capacity for our lives to be given to the world. Without understanding that God has chosen us, without understanding that we're blessed, without understanding that we're broken, then we can't ever be given as life to the world. So often in my life, I've been trying to give myself as life to the world before I, in the context of not really experiencing that deep brokenness that I was going through in this experience. Henry Nouwen says these things. These are a couple quotes I want to give you here that I think are really important. First of all, he talks about being beloved by God and that is our identity. We're beloved by God. And when I read that in his book, it really spoke to me so much because I have known that intellectually, but I hadn't really so much experienced that down inside. If you said, "Does God love you?" I'd say, "Sure, God loves me. He loves me a lot." Yeah. But in this experience, my mind went back and my heart went back to Zephaniah chapter 3:17. When my wife Carol died 10 years ago, Bill knows about this. That's another whole chapel talk there sometime. But when my wife Carol died 10 years ago, Cliff Barris, who's with Billy Graham for years and years, been an encouragement to me over the years, he spoke at Carol's funeral, and he used this verse, Zephaniah 3:17. Listen to this. This is how beloved I am, you are before God. The Lord your God is with you. He is mighty to save. He will take great delight in you. He will quiet you with his love. He will rejoice over you with singing. God just took me back to those words that Cliff spoke in Zephaniah 3:17, and I began to see that I'm beloved by God. And God was really just kind of using this Nouwen book as sort of a chassis. If you understand that, for a car to run, it's got to have a chassis on which to put it so it can run. It's like God was just using this book as a setup for me to get this chassis under me so that the things he was going to show me that were under the waterline, he was going to use this book, the message of this book as a chassis. And the fact that I was God's beloved son was one of those things. The other thing that went into that chassis that fit under there was the fact that I am a broken person. I'm a broken person. I, like everyone else, is broken. But I, sometimes different than other people, had a really hard time recognizing, come to grips with my brokenness. And Henry, I've had a number of brokenness experiences in my life, and God has used each one of those to take me deeper in him. But somehow this was deeper still. I quit the basketball team at Davidson College when I was on scholarship there. Brokenness experience. I got fired from working at the Baptist Home Mission Board after 6 years. Brokenness experience. Had a rift with a friend. Brokenness experience. Lost my mom and dad. Brokenness experiences. Lost my wife, Carol, 10 years ago. The ultimate in broken experiences. Blending a family, bringing all of our kids together, breaking experience. But here I was at a new place of brokenness, and I'm reading this Henry Nouwen book, and he said this. He said, and I was realizing through what Randy had said, and my sister had said, and these people around me were saying, I realize I'm broken, and then my actions that led to this brokenness was because I've really hurt other people. I have mistreated them, and including my wife, the people that I love, the people around me. And Henry Nouwen addressed that in sort of setting me up for this whole under the waterline experience. He says this. He says, our brokenness reveals something about who we are. Our suffering and pains are not simply bothersome interruptions of our lives. Rather, they touch us in our uniqueness and our most intimate individuality. The way I am broken tells you something unique about me. I am deeply convinced that each human being suffers in a way that no other human being suffers. We're called to claim our unique brokenness. And I realized here that I'd really never done that, never known that, never done it. Maybe you identify with that. Henry Nouwen goes on to say this. He says, how can we respond to this brokenness? First, face it squarely and befriend it. Our first, most spontaneous response to pain and suffering is to avoid it, to keep it at arm's length, to ignore it, circumvent, or deny it. Suffering is almost always experienced as an unwelcome intrusion. The first step to healing is not to step away from the pain, but to step toward it, to claim it as an intimate companion. Second, put it under the blessing. Brokenness under the blessing, a precondition for befriending it. But when we keep listening attentively to the voice calling us to the beloved, it becomes possible to live our brokenness, not as a confirmation of our fear that we are worthless, but as an opportunity to pure and deepen the blessing that rests upon us. Embrace your brokenness, the Lord was saying to me, and bring your brokenness under the fact that you are blessed to be my beloved son. And then he says this, because here's what I'm doing in this. This is a gentle pruning. This is a gentle pruning now, and says it's the joy of being disciplined, purified, and pruned. Just as athletes experience great pain as they run the race, can at the same time taste the joy of knowing that they are coming closer to their goal. So also can the beloved experience suffering as a way of a deeper communion for which they yearn. Now, I don't know what kind of suffering you have in your life or what kind of pain is there, what kind of brokenness is inside of you, but I'll tell you, it was right here that God was, he had set me up, put this chassis under me, which he could take me under the waterline to expose where I was broken. The next person in this process, after Henry Nouwen, was a guy by the name of Jeff Terrell. And Jeff was my sister Kathy had taken such an interest in me and has spoken so directly and clearly and courageously to me. And she was so invested in this that she said, Barry, I want to help you find a counselor. And this counseling thing can be a little tricky, you know. It's like, am I really going to connect with this person or not, you know. But here's what I said. I said, Lord, you've already used my sister to speak to me so clearly. I'm going to assume that you're using her here now. And this guy that she has in mind is the right person for me. Made an appointment, went over to see Jeff Terrell, walked into his office, told him in a few sentences what I was struggling with. And before I'd been in there 5 minutes, that's what he said. I know exactly what the problem is, and I can help you. I'm going, all righty then. This is good. Because I sure don't know how to help myself here. And what Jeff explained to me was this. Over a whole series of intense sessions that we had together, where I'm now struggling with what's under the waterline here and trying to find what it is. I'm broken here. Something's not right. The way I treat people, the way I respond, the way I'm leading my life here, there's something inside of here that's just not functioning the way it's supposed to. There's something broken here. What is it? I have no idea what it is or what to do about it. Jeff says this, Barry says there are 12 reductionistic personality profiles. In psychoanalytic terms, all of them are negative. Result of the fall. So all of us in this room have different personalities and different personality profiles. Every one of them have positive aspects to them, but every one of them in some way or another is broken. And he said this, he says, and when we're broken and these negative, we are living in these negative personality types and all of us have one, then really what determines how sick you are in this is the velocity of the weather vane and how hard that weather vane is blowing against your personality type. And the psychosis or the psychological issues that you have inside of here. And if it's blowing mildly, then the result of that is going to be that you're probably out there looking like a normal person and functioning, but you're still broken. But he said, and if it's not mild, but it's really severe, then you're probably in a little room in a padded cell and got to strap down somewhere. He said, so really the issue with you, Barry, is here's this personality profile, and he says the issue is how much is the wind blowing and how much are you willing to bring the wind back so that the amplitude of this is less and less and you can live in the uniqueness of your brokenness. And that's where we started. And it began to help me significantly as I began to realize what my personality was like. He took me on the sort of the next step here in this under the waterline journey, diving down deeper. He says, Barry, your personality profile, and this will be different for each one of us in here, but he says, your personality profile has several characteristics to it. He says, there are really about eight, and he gave me a book to read on these. And here are the eight traits of a personality profile like mine. Lack of empathy. Manipulative and exploitive, entitled, inability to receive direction, control, haughty or judgmental, unwillingness to acknowledge reality, and creates favorable impressions. Okay? People like me till they get to know me, basically, is the idea of that. Okay? Jeff said this to me. I said, and so we're going through this list, and I'm going, check, check, check. Right? Yes, that's me. Here we go. Okay, I'm these are mine. And he said to me, he said this, he says, Barry, you know, really, it's interesting that all the CEOs that I know, entrepreneurial types, he says, almost all of them have this same personality disorder that you have, the same psychosis that you have. And he says, you find these particular traits of this particular personality profile in people like fighter pilots, criminals, preachers, and CEOs. I said, well, I'm two of the four of those. I'm not a fighter pilot. I could be a criminal for some of the stuff I did as a kid, but these two right here, these two over here, I definitely... And one of those. He says, you fit right in. You're classic in this. Doesn't excuse anything. You're still just as broken. But the point is, there are a lot of people who deal with this kind of thing. So here we are now with people speaking into my life from my sister and Jeff Terrell and Henry Nouwen and all these other people. And I know these eight traits and I'm looking here and I'm now at this point right here. And I'm going, you know what? God, I don't know what to do next. I don't know what the root cause is. I don't know what the issues are. I don't know what I need to do to fix this. I have no idea. And I told that to Jeff, and he says, we're going to ask God to work on it in an amazing way. God just began to work on this. He gave me a book by a lady named Alice Miller, not even a Christian, called The Drama of the Gifted Child. He didn't give that to me because I'm a gifted child. Basically, he gave that to me because kids that experience childhood trauma, kids who experience abuse, kids who experience a difficult childhood from early on before they can even speak or before they're cognitively aware, those kids come to a place where there has to be healing in their lives. And the drama of the gifted child is the child who recognizes that, mourns it, and begins to find healing. She says, you can go to a therapist from now till the end of your life and never find any help until you begin to mourn. And at this particular point in time, I said, God, I want to mourn whatever is under there. I don't even know what it is. I want to mourn it. And then God just began to show it to me through reading this book and him just speaking to me. My sister, Kat, I'd always had this view of my family. I have such a great family. I have some great parents. Awesome, wonderful. My sister, on the other hand, would say, Barry, not so much. And I began to think about this during this time. If that's true, then what in the world? I mean, both of those can't be right. There's something not matching up here. And as I began to dig down deep, now under the waterline, trying to find this root cause of what was going on, saying, God, I want to mourn this. I want to mourn whatever it was that went on in my life back there. There were a couple things that I began to see. And I won't give you all this morning, but just enough to kind of give you a feel for this. But I began to realize that, number one, that the day I was born, I had had to be taken away from my mom because I had a blood transfusion. I had to have a blood transfusion because of my blood type. And they took me away, and there are actually pictures in my baby book of me strapped down with my arms by my side because I've been scratching my face so much. And I was injuring myself, scratching, because I was trying to escape, whatever it was, I guess, get back to my mom, whatever the deal was, but I was strapped down here to have this blood transfusion. This lady who wrote this drama, The Gifted Child, says this. She said, it is absolutely fundamental that she, mother, not be separated from a newborn, for the hormones that foster and nourish her motherly instinct are released immediately after birth and continue in the following weeks, days and weeks as she grows more familiar with her baby. The bonding through skin and eye contact between mother and baby after birth stimulates the feeling in both of them that they belong together. She is given a sense of safety, and he is given a sense of safety that he needs to trust his mother. Listen, this initial mutual intimacy can never be created again, and its absence can be a serious obstacle in a person's life right from the start. I looked at that and I said, you know, that's me. Right from the start, my mom and I got off on the wrong foot. And then from that point on, it was a struggle. I loved my mom. I loved my dad. They loved me. But there were some things going on there that were creating brokenness in my life. Let me see if I can just kind of summarize it for you briefly. My mom was the seventh of nine children. There were things going on in her life that she had needs that were never met as a result of that. My dad was the eighth of 11 children. He had needs in his life that were not met by his parents because he was so far down here. My dad had this incredible drive to be successful, and he was. My mother had this incredible need to be loved by my father and for him to meet her needs. My dad was an emotional man, but at the same time, he couldn't identify his own emotions, and so as a result of that, he couldn't really identify with my mother's emotions, and so he was not meeting her needs. So there was a huge conflict there, and now that my sister began to talk to me about it, I remember the fights and the arguments that somehow push way back in the back. And my mother, because she wasn't having her needs met by my dad, turned to this little guy here in her arms and said, I can't control him and have him meet my needs, but I can control him and have him meet my needs. And in a very controlling way, she began to control my life and use terms and things like that. Like for instance, one of them was shame on you. There was never good enough for my mom. Had to do it the way my mom wanted it done. If I didn't do it the way my mom wanted it done, then it wasn't good enough. Even to the place where she wanted to decide who I was going to date and who I was going to marry. If you said that today to her, she'd turn over in her grave. She had no idea. My dad, as all dads, was my hero. He was Superman to me. But see, him being Superman was not good enough because I saw in my mom the fact that he was a failure in her eyes, and so I had to now be more than Superman. You follow where I'm going with this? It's sort of a whacked out sort of thing there, and I'm looking down inside and I'm going, I had no idea. No idea. None. And when I began to see these things, I began to see that all these years, I'd lived according to my false self, trying to prove myself, to gain approval by my achievement and my performance and my success, as opposed to living according to my true self, as God's beloved son in who I am. Can't love you more, can't love you less. Well pleased. Wow. It was an absolutely frustrating experience for me to see that. Because here I am reading this book, seeing these things about myself, talking to my counselor about them. We're going to close with this, and then we'll pick this up again tomorrow. But I understood these things in my mind, but I couldn't find a breakthrough in my heart. I was learning these things from Jeff and this book and all these thoughts and stuff that were coming to me, and I'm going, all these traits, and then under the waterline, all these experiences with my mom. And I'm going, this is totally, absolutely frustrating to me because these things are true. And yet there's no breakthrough. There's nothing. I can't seem to get a handle on how I go through this to find healing. And I was stuck. And really, honestly, didn't know what to do next. I'll close with this and then we'll pick up back up on this tomorrow and I'll tell you the rest of the story. My friend Jeff, my counselor friend, said, Barry, and this is so important to me. He says, Barry, you can have cognitive thoughts about things and know that they're true. But he says, until there's an emotional response to those very things, and those two things become connected, cognitive thought, emotional response, till those two things become connected, there can be no healing. There is no insight so that healing can take place.